This episode is brought to you by Sport Yogi, the app that introduces yoga, mindfulness, and meditation to athletes, all without the fluff that usually comes with it. From building flexibility to harnessing your focus and anxiety and much more, Sport Yogi gives you simple to follow sessions that you can easily add into your everyday training or everyday life. To get started, simply visit sportyogi.com/join-now. And listeners of the show can receive 40% off annual and lifetime plans by using the code RAISINGYOURGAME at checkout. So once again, that is sportyogi.com/join-now to get started. Welcome to the Raising Your Game podcast, where I help connect well-being and performance, as well as speaking to those in the world of sport to share the experiences, practice, and wisdom that can help you in raising your game both on and off the field. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Lewis Hatchett, and in this episode, I speak with Olympic swimmer and silver medalist Siobhan Marie O'Connor. But before we get started, if you're a long-time listener or even a first-time listener to this show and you haven't done already, do me the one favor, which is to subscribe to this podcast on whatever channel that you are listening to it on. It is the cheapest and easiest way in order to support what I'm doing, and I thank you so much for doing that. Anyway, on to Siobhan's podcast. And Siobhan has a story that I really resonated with. She was forced to retire from her sport at the age of 25 due to health complications that are caused by ulcerative colitis. And we talk about her story, and it's one of how, against physical struggle, she was able to make it to the top and achieve success. We go into how she grew up with the condition, what life was like before and after the diagnosis, the issues that it causes, competing at a world stage at the young age of 15, second chances that she got later on in life, self-belief, her amazing relationship with her coach, and a really brilliant system that she created that tracked her progress and left her feeling confident, knowing that she'd done everything to be able to perform at her best. So this is a great conversation, and Siobhan is lovely, and it really is one of triumph against so many physical challenges. And she embodies that belief that if you want something enough, you really can achieve it. So let's get straight into this episode, and I give you Siobhan Marie O'Connor. Enjoy. Siobhan, thank you so much for coming on. It's been good to just chat for the last sort of 10 minutes or so. And I think we're going to get into some really cool topics around not only your journey, but sort of athletes' journey in and out of sport. But how have you been over the recent times? I mean, it's probably been a bit of a whirlwind year for you, but how you been recently?
I've been good. I've been okay. I think it's such a hard transition. I think whenever you finish sport at whatever time in your life, you know, whether it's on your terms, whether it's not on your terms, whether you feel it's premature or whether you feel like it's sort of, you know, you've had the career that you've dreamed of and you've come to the end at, you know, a great time. I think it's always really hard because it is like giving up such a huge part of your life. I finished swimming, and I'd say, yeah, it wasn't entirely on my terms, which was a shame. But, you know, I feel that in some ways, the way I retired gave me a better perspective of everything I kind of achieved in previous years. And that actually made me feel really proud. I think you kind of always, which I was always chasing the next thing and looking to the next goal. I never really stepped back and looked at what I'd done. So I think in some ways, the retirement gave me a perspective to think, well, actually what I achieved and, you know, despite my condition, made me really proud. So that was quite a nice feeling. But then obviously I've felt a bit weird, you know, not swimming and not having that routine. I think that's the thing I've missed the most, is having that structure to my days, you know, knowing where I had to be at what time and having that completely stripped away, and you know, I haven't exactly found, I mean, I've got direction, like things I want to be doing, like I've got ambitions and stuff going forward, but it's not as regimented as it was, like compared to, you know, the majority of my life being an athlete and training 30 hours a week. When that's gone, it's, yeah, very weird. You find yourself a bit lost. So there's pros and cons to retirement, definitely. And I feel like I've experienced both. So it's a weird feeling at the moment, but I'm doing well. Like I sort of sounds a bit, you know, all doom and gloom, but it's not. I am doing really well. I think it's just a strange time. I think that's the best way to describe it, is it's a strange process to go through.
Yeah, I think I resonated with your story so much, and we just chatted before we came on about me ending my career through retiring through injury, and I think the biggest thing, the word that really came around everything after when I finished, and you just said it, you said perspective, and I think perspective is a huge thing to have as an athlete, and we can get into that. But the other one was identity and this sense of like who I am. What has been your sort of journey over the past few months around your own identity, and have you learned anything over the last few months about yourself and your whole journey, career and self?
I have, definitely. And I feel that I, over probably the past, I'll say that again because I'm thinking of sirens. Over probably the past, I'd actually say probably 5-6 years since Rio, I've had a huge learning experience about identity. I think when I achieved what I did in Rio, I thought it would completely change my perception of myself. In some ways, I just, you know, the whole build up to Rio and what I thought it meant to win an Olympic medal, it was my dream, it was my goal. I lived and breathed swimming for, you know, 10-15 years up to that point, and I achieved my goal. And afterwards, I just, obviously things changed, like external things changed. And you know, I was really lucky to have these opportunities that opened up to me. And you know, there were so many great things that came from that medal, but it didn't change how I felt deep down. And I think that that was one of the hardest things, was I then had this problem with feeling that there was a correlation in terms of externally what people thought of me, because when I had the medal, everyone wanted to know me. I had people that didn't really know me or speak to me before want to kind of, you know, speak to me and things like that, which come with success. And then I had this thing where when I wasn't swimming so well towards probably the end of my career, I felt that people didn't like me, which is so bizarre and so ridiculous, like when I think about it. But genuinely as an athlete, you believe that deep down. And I didn't believe inside that the medal changed how I felt about myself. It just felt like it changed how everyone else viewed me. So there was, obviously, if you look at like how that's going to make you feel, there's going to be a bit of an identity crisis there. Like in reflection, I can almost see it happening. You know, when you're younger and I was at school, everyone would be like Siobhan the swimmer. And when I would go away to competitions, there was like, oh, she's away at swimming competition. I used to love that sort of thing, that people saw me as Siobhan the swimmer. And I associated it with being better at swimming meant I was a better person. It meant people liked me more. So then when I had that, you know, I had a period of really struggling with like post-Olympic blues after Rio and struggling to find my feet, struggling to sort of, I don't know, adjust. And also with all the health struggles that I had after Rio and not being able to perform the way I wanted, I felt like my body was letting me down. I felt like my body was letting me down. And I also felt like I was letting everyone else down and people weren't going to like me. So if anything, the identity kind of problem that I had was whilst I was swimming, to be honest, like it really, really affected me. And then retirement has actually in some ways given me a different perspective, because I realized when I sort of put my messages out there and explained what had gone on, people were just so kind and lovely, and I had so many warm messages, so much support, that it made me feel that I was actually more of a person than just an athlete. It wasn't all about my success. But up until that point, not that I didn't realize it. Obviously, I did. I know my family, you know, they don't care about this. You know, they care about me as a person. But you do, I think, as an athlete, always have this correlation from quite a young age if you're in sport that, you know, success reaps rewards. And then people sort of, I don't know, that not that they like you more, because that's ridiculous, but there is all these things that come as being an athlete and getting more successful. You know, people want to sponsor you, they want to be associated with you, you get invited to things. And so therefore, it's easy to see why athletes would, I think, have that perception. And so I think, if anything, it's been quite, retiring, it wasn't nice, but in some ways, I felt a bit, like overwhelmed with all the kind messages that I received, which made me feel actually like, you know, it doesn't matter about my performances, actually people care for me as a person. And I think that was lovely.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack there, but there's one thing that I saw and read, and that was the letter you wrote to yourself. And I think it's on the UK, is it in the UK Sport or Sport England website. And it's an amazing letter, and it was one of a series, I think, and that from other athletes. But when reading through that letter, and I think you mentioned it at the start, the thing that came out of it for me when I was reading it was this huge sense of pride that you had in yourself. So you were talking about how difficult this was going to be, and you're talking to your younger self about how difficult it was going to be. But then at the same time, just this huge amount of pride in that it gave you. Did that was such a lovely thing to have. And I almost feel sometimes when people retire from their career, because I felt it, as you say, like I was proud of it, and sometimes you don't mean it, like you can sometimes just say it for because that's the right thing to say. But I think when you've gone through something that you've gone through, and at the age that you've had to finish at, like to say a word like that, because it's so easy to say, like, oh, I wish you could carry on, I wish you could continue, I wish we could have a little bit more, I hope. But to have pride at that age really shows how true it was. I thought it was just a beautiful, what is a lovely letter that you wrote, but also just that sense of pride is so important.
Yeah, it is definitely. And you're right, I can count on, there's countless times that I did interviews in my career and I said, you know, I was really proud of that swim, and I didn't really mean it. And because you're always, when you're in the bubble, when you're still competing, I think you're always striving for more. I think that's what makes you a performer, I guess. Like you're never satisfied, and some of the best athletes, that's just their mindset and the way they, you know, the way they have to be able to get the best out of themselves. Like you can't sort of, if you're satisfied with something, you wouldn't keep pushing. So there was lots of times in my career where, you know, I'd say things I didn't mean in interviews, like not to be disingenuous, but I think you're right. You just feel like, you know, if I remember getting a bronze medal at the World Championships in 2015, and I think I said I was proud of that, and I wasn't deep down. I was disappointed that I hadn't gone better. But you know, you can't sort of stand on the podium and say you're not proud of that performance. I just knew I could get better. But I think what happened when I retired, it was the first time I actually had a chance to take a step back and actually look at my career and all the struggles that I had along the way. You know, and speaking, I sat down with my coach, and it was a few weeks before I announced my retirement, and obviously I told him and he knew what was going on, and he said to me, he was like, I really, really look back and I don't know how we did what we did. I don't know how we achieved what we achieved together with the journey that you had. And I was almost so blasé about it. And I remember not being able to put like 3 good weeks of training together without getting ill and getting run down. And with my condition, ulcerative colitis, it affects your immune system. So it wasn't just the struggles that I had with managing that condition, it was the fact that with that condition, I'd be so susceptible to getting run down and ill. And, you know, when you're an athlete, you're pretty vulnerable anyway, because you're pushing your body so hard. You know, you can pick up illnesses and injuries all the time. But when my immune system was already compromised and and, you know, I wasn't the fittest and healthiest, trying to push my body to the limit every day. I used to just be, to be honest, like teetering on the edge of getting ill every single week. And it was a constant battle to just keep me in the pool and keep me healthy. And that then, I think all those things, like I forgot, I was so focused in always chasing the next goal, chasing the next thing. I didn't want to even see that, because in some ways, to me, recognizing that was like a weakness. And it was almost allowing myself to believe that actually I shouldn't be able to do this because of my body. And then when I retired, and obviously the way I retired, it was pretty upsetting and disappointing. I actually then got the perspective of, oh my gosh, I actually managed to achieve what I did despite all of that, and actually let it soak in a little bit, because I didn't want to. I knew that if I did, I'd start having doubts like, oh, could I actually do this? My body is, you know, shot to bits. In terms of, you know, like all the stress of the physical stress, the mental stress that swimming creates, and ulcerative colitis. You know, a lot of people are triggered to their colitis and flare-ups is stress. And for me, it was stress. And so, you know, it was really difficult to manage. And I think the perspective that I got sort of after I retired, I could actually genuinely say I was so proud of myself. And especially because I was really young as well. And when I first started swimming, when I was first diagnosed with colitis, I was only 16. And, you know, I look back and think, oh my gosh, like that person, I have a bit of a dissociation with her. Like I think it's somewhat almost someone different, but I'm so proud of the person I was back then to get through it. And to have the mental resilience to think that although I had all these obstacles and I was dealt, you know, not ideal cards, I kept going, and I didn't let the idea that actually, you know, my body might not be up to it stop me. You know, every time I had a setback, I got back in and I kept going. And in order to kind of do that, I had to just have that quite, you know, single-minded mindset. So I didn't really let those thoughts creep in. And then, you know, when I've retired, I've been able to actually say, wow, I don't know how I got through that. And also hearing it from my coach as well was lovely. Like it means everything. And I think that's something that's really helped me through this tough time and this tough transition was, you know, I feel like I punched above my weight, and not everyone knows the journey. And that's the thing with sport is, you know, I had a difficult journey, but so many athletes have difficult journeys, and that's so much the stuff you don't see. And I think I've always thought that I've been guilty of believing when you see people on the podium. When I was growing up, seeing people on the podium, I used to think, well, everything must have been completely smooth sailing for them to achieve their goals, and everything just went right from sort of start to finish, and then they finished on top of the podium. But that's not it at all. And you know, I spoke to Freya Anderson, one of the swimmers who's out in Tokyo, and she said that the same thing. She suffered with injuries and illness when she was growing up, and she said no one really ever spoke out when she was growing up about the struggles. Like you just didn't really hear about it. And I think that's probably one of the really great things which has come about, especially in Tokyo, with people being way more open about their journeys and their struggles to kind of even stand on the podium or stand and compete at an Olympics. You know, that's allowing younger athletes and people coming through in sport to realize that it's not just smooth sailing, it's not just straight lines, and that people's journeys are like this, but you just don't see it. So when it happens to you, you think, this isn't normal, and can I actually achieve? Because, you know, these are things that how do I know what to do? How do I know to push through? So I think people being open about their experiences is so helpful.
Yeah, this, I spoke in a recent podcast with Kath Bishop about how nice it is for, and I think I had done another episode myself on how nice it is just hearing these athletes talk about their struggles. To be a young, I think of like, if I had some of my heroes saying stuff like that, how much more included I probably would have felt in the sport that I was growing up in, thinking that, okay, having these self-doubts, having these worries, like that's a normal part of the process, like I'm not, and dropping out of the sport wouldn't be an option. The one thing I wanted to ask you about was, you mentioned Tokyo, like obviously that's going to be a really tough thing for you to watch right now, like being the age you're at, like obviously you weren't able to get there because you had to end your career. But in the post that you put up about ending your career, like, there was a real genuine level of acceptance of where you're at. And I think if I put my own personal hat on with my journey, like, that has been something I'd struggled with really hard, like, to start with. Like, I still now have this moment of thinking, like, I can jump over the fence and compete and just carry on, and that I could just go back into it. And then I have to have this level of acceptance. So for me, mine is being aware of those, that thinking, and not battling it in any way. But how have you managed your level of acceptance to being where you're at with your condition and having to pull away?
I think it's something that I know so many athletes have struggled with, because of what you said, because you feel that when you retire, sometimes you think, could I have done more? Could I have?
It's the what ifs, isn't it? What if?
Exactly, it's the what ifs that hurt, and I think for me personally, I almost don't have those what ifs, because for years I struggled with realizing that my body was not allowing me to do what my mind wanted me to do. And when I say that, you know, when I say that retirement was really hard, sometimes the worst bits were actually the times before, where I was not getting what I wanted out of myself. And, you know, I'd have a flare up, I'd be out the pool, I couldn't put weeks of training back together. I had a really bad flare up in 2019, which it completely wiped me out. And to be honest, you know, since that point, I hadn't ever really felt like I recovered properly, which that was the hardest thing to come to terms with. And so I came to the, and it was, you know, months and months, you know, it was a couple of years where I just felt that my body was letting me down all the time. And so that's why I don't have those what ifs, because it wasn't a case of thinking, what if, you know, if I was to get back in the pool tomorrow, do I think I still had a chance? Not at all. You know, I don't have that, and that's really sad, but I had to almost, I don't know, yeah, accept that. And it took me a long, long time. But the way that I retired was, I became unwell in January. I had another flare up, and it was like, there's just no way I can carry on and compete. And it was horrible, and it was so disheartening. But it had been sort of flare up after flare up after flare up, and then that was the position I was in. So I didn't have the what ifs about, or if I got back in now, could I, you know, get back to the level I want to be at? No, that's never going to happen. I think that's sort of been easy for me to eradicate those what ifs. But the what ifs that I've always had, which do sort of, you know, really eat away at me, were the what if my body wasn't as, the thing. If I hadn't have been dealt the cards that I was when I was 16, who knows what I could have done in the sport, because that was like my Achilles heel my whole career, my health, and the time where I performed my best, I put about 12 good weeks of training together, and I went like point something off the world record and came second at Olympics, nearly beat the world record holder. I was 0.3 of a second off gold. You know, I genuinely believed when I got it right, I could genuinely take on like anyone in the world. Like I believe I had, without sounding like arrogant or anything, I feel like I had so much talent. And my coach always used to say I was a bit like I can't remember the analogy exactly, but a bit like a racehorse, where I had like so much talent, but like my body just, I didn't have the means. Like it was. And so that's the what ifs that I struggle with, is the what if I had, you know, a great, robust body that allowed me to be able to do everything that I wanted to do, you know, never miss a day of training, never get ill, never get run down, just always be on my game. That's the what ifs. And that's been hard, but that's been hard throughout my whole career. I think that was stuff I've had this battle in my head since I was diagnosed at 16. So it's not a case of that feeling for me after retirement. It was coming to terms with the fact that eventually it got too much. My body let me down to the point where I couldn't carry on. I think deep down, I sort of knew that that would happen at some point, and probably earlier than I'd have liked, which is a shame. It is a massive shame. But then again, when I said like what I said before, which is it gave me the perspective. Before, I couldn't let those thoughts in as much. Like, I just had to keep pushing. I had to just have this resilient mindset of, you know, like I can still do this. Like, I can conquer my doubts, and I can stand up and race the best in the world. And I've got a great work ethic. I've got the talent, and just, you know, give me a good few weeks of training and I can do it. And thankfully, in a few times in my career, I got that consistency and, you know, performed in the way that I'd always hoped and believed I was capable of. But yeah, it wasn't smooth sailing, and I just didn't let those doubts in. And I think the retirement gave me that perspective to think, hey, what I achieved and how difficult it was really quite special. And it was, you know, it wasn't just me. It was like my mum, my dad, my coach, like they were so supportive, because there were so many times where, like, throughout my career, it wasn't just me sort of having that strong mental mindset. It was my family literally picking me up and helping me through those tough times. And also that those what ifs, I think, are really sort of quite pointless when I think about it, because I could say, what if I wasn't, you know, doubt those cards, but then, like, I wouldn't change my journey for the world. Like, that's the thing. You know, I feel that I had a lot of tough lessons, but if I hadn't learned those lessons, I don't think I'd have been the swimmer that I was to win those medals. So I learned so much through having to be resilient and working harder than I felt like I had a very good work ethic, and I used to absolutely push myself to the limit. And I feel like I probably wouldn't have ever pushed myself that far had I not had to do that. So I feel like I can't think like that. It's almost an unhealthy way to think, and also pretty pointless, because, you know, without sounding cliche, that did make me the swimmer that I was. I was tough and I was resilient, and people might not think that I was tough because I always used to get ill. But I think when, you know, the people that know me knew how tough I was and how resilient I was and how much I sort of had to really fight tooth and nail to just even stay in the pool and achieve those things. So
it's really interesting. Like, I have a very similar experience. Like, when I was 15, I had my first like spinal fracture, and it was the first sort of crossroad I came to when my career ended, and could have ended. Sorry, so it could have like completely gone, all right, you can't play this sport. This is not going to be for you. Your body's just going to keep breaking. But like the 2 years, because I didn't play the sport for 2 years after that, and then I now look back at that and go, that's how I built my drive, my resilience, my work ethic. And every time I see a young athlete now, I always ask them, like, have you had an injury? Have you had a big setback? And if they're like, no, I'm like, damn it. Like, come on, we need one. And because I think that's the thing, that you genuinely need something alongside it. And as I'm listening to your story, like, you could look at, yeah, the setbacks and the what ifs if I had a different body. But you're right, you may not have got that mentality, because it would have been easier. We would have been a bit more plain sailing. You may not fight for it that little bit more. But also now, like, what an inspiration you can be in order to show people, like, look, I had this and I still achieve this. It's a really weird seesaw and blend, because you almost feel like the people that don't have those hardships or setbacks, they don't know yet how much they can really unearth from within themselves. But also, you kind of need that setback to happen. And I don't know whether you could, I really hope you could do it without a setback, which would be great, so that people don't get hurt and people don't get injured. But I really don't know where that one sits, because it's just so tough, because it's like you do need that setback. You do need that thing, whether it's someone, it might be what someone told you. There's so many athletes that have had like a coach at their very beginning, a teacher or a coach at the start of their careers that said, no, you couldn't do that. And then that brings this like fire in their belly and then they're bang, they're off. Or it might be just looking and being aware of when that sort of setback or someone that's doubted them has happened. And then you, the ones that tend to build that drive are the ones that have recognized what's happened and then gone, no, I'm going to choose to go the other way. I think people that maybe choose to accept those setbacks then fall into a bit of a trap and then go on another path. So yeah, it's a real tough balance, that one, like which way you want to go, like, okay, get a setback or don't get a setback and maybe don't be as driven. I don't know the answer to that one at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, I know. And it's weird, isn't it? It's you know, you don't want to wish that people go through these struggles, and you don't, like, I would never wish that people go through that, but it is what makes, or I don't know, that these things teach you lessons which are so valuable in sport. And that's the thing which is great about athletes sort of being more open about their journey, is people realizing how much can be learned from things like that. And you know, some of the best things I ever learned were from really tough times, not sort of all through my colitis, but disappointing swims and disappointing results where I, so in 2012, I thought that I'd missed out on the Olympic team. And it was the, back then you had two different trials for the Olympics. So you had the first trials and you had the second trials, which are a few months later in June, but the majority of the slots were filled in April for the Olympics in the summer. And I remember the year before, I was only 15, but I managed to qualify for the World Championship team.
Yeah, I was going to get on to the World Championships. This is a really interesting period of your time, being only 15.
Yeah, so it was a complete shock. And I remember this was a really vulnerable age and a really influential age for me. And there was a couple lessons that I think at that point in my life, I took with me throughout the remainder of my career. And they were really fundamental things that I learned. So the first one was that, that time when I qualified for the World Championships when I was 15. So I went to a competition and it was the second trials for the Summer Championships. So it was in June and I was still a junior swimmer. So I was competing at the European Juniors that year. That was my big meet. And the competition, the trials, it was just sort of a preparation competition before I went on to the Europeans. And I went there and I had no expectations whatsoever. I didn't think, you know, I was going to be there or thereabouts in terms of even making a final. I got to the competition, I was in hard training, and in the heat I swam pretty well. I was swimming pretty fast, and I remember my coach, he said to me after the heat, he said, you could win this, but in the heat you slowed down almost in the last 10 meters because he didn't believe you could win. And he said, you're paying far too much respect to the people you're racing against just because they're older than you, just because they're, you know, more experienced. And he said, you're almost scared to win. And I thought, hang on a sec. No, I'm not scared to win. But I realized I probably was. And I think I just thought, because I was 15, I had almost like no right to beat these girls, which is ridiculous when you think about it. But back then I did. I just thought, well, you know, they're older than me, they're more experienced, they're actually trying to qualify for the world's team, and I'm just here as a 15 year old just trying to get some racing experience. So it came to the final and I thought, well, I'm going to prove my coach wrong. And I swam a great race and I actually won the event, so I got picked to swim at the World Championships. And it was such a shock. I remember my mum and dad came to every competition with me. They've been all around the world, and unfortunately, like, my dad wasn't there watching. I think they just sort of thought it wasn't, you know, a big deal. And then I remember my mum calling my dad saying, she's qualified for the World Championships. And my dad said, sorry, what? He was just like completely blown away. It was such a, you know, I never expected it in my wildest dreams. And that lesson that Dave taught me stuck with me forever. I've remembered it constantly throughout my career. And I remember some coaches that I used to really look up to used to say that one of the things about me that they really respected was that I just didn't fear anyone that I raced against. You know, whatever they had achieved and whatever they had done in their career, I'd always get in and absolutely give them a good race. And I think that's the thing, you have to be respectful of your opponents when you're out of the pool. and before you race, but during the race, you shouldn't give anyone like more respect. I think that's something that I definitely did growing up, and I see it happen so much throughout sport, is you kind of almost give people an advantage just by respecting their achievements too much. And people are beatable at the end of the day. Like, it's, sport's a crazy thing. I've seen Olympic champions come last, like not even make it through to a final. It just, these things happen in sport, so you can't think like that. I think that was a really sort of pivotal lesson that I learned, and that sort of set me up for the next year, where I had the hopes of, obviously I've had the surprise of making the world championship team. London 2012 was never in my expectations or my ambitions. I thought I'd be too young. I know I was only going to be 16 by the time the Olympics came around, but making the team in 2015 gave me the hope that maybe I could actually make the team in London. So I sacrificed so much that year. I remember I went away on a training camp to Australia for 7 weeks. I missed school for about like 10-12 weeks of the term just before my GCSEs, just to try and qualify by going and doing every single training camp that I could. You know, my mum and dad were a bit like, oh my gosh, she's missing so much school. But I think they knew that if they hadn't have supported me and I'd have missed out on the team, and I hadn't been allowed to go on these camps, I'd have always thought, what if? So it was just, they just had to let me that year. I came to the first trials, the Olympic trials, and it was in the Aquatic Centre in London. And it was a complete pressure cooker. I remember everyone knew how much it meant to make an Olympic team, and the atmosphere was crazy. It was so tense. Like, you could hear a pin drop even when the races were on. Like, no one was cheering or anything. It was just so tense. Everyone was sort of like, I don't know, walking around like a zombie. And I remember I'd never experienced that before. I'd never had the pressure or the nerves of trying to make a team. And I completely, absolutely bottled it, basically. I came fifth in my event. I remember on the way to the pool to race the final of the 200 medley, you know, I was so nervous. I couldn't speak. I just couldn't hardly even breathe. I was just so overwhelmed by that experience. And I remember I was devastated then afterwards, thinking, oh my gosh, the dream of swimming at the Olympic Games is over. You know, the top two girls got selected to go to the Olympics, and that event was then closed off, so no one else could qualify. So I thought that was it. I thought the dream was over. And I remember I wanted to just go home after that. I wanted to just cry my eyes out and not look at a swimming pool and have to carry on the rest of the week. I kind of just wanted to go home and sulk. And I remember it was my mum and dad that said to me, you know, we got back to the apartment and they said, you need to carry on the rest of the week. You need to swim this meet through. You need to just get back on the horse as quickly as you can. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to swim again. I was absolutely devastated. You know, we were all crying and it was really, really hard. It was like having that hope and then it sort of just being shattered. And they said that they were like, you know, the longer you dwell on this and the longer you sort of let it take hold of you, the worse it'll be, the harder it will be to pick yourself up. So they said, like, tomorrow morning you're going to go to the pool and you're going to swim. And I remember it was so painful, like, so tough to do that, but it was genuinely the best lesson I could have ever learned. And I thank my parents so much for encouraging me to do that, because I, as hard as it was, I didn't dwell on my loss or my disappointment. I just picked myself back up. And I had to do that, obviously, you know, as a few months later, I got diagnosed with colitis. I had to do that constantly throughout my career. Like, pretty much every time I'd get ill, I'd have a setback. I just had to just basically like dust myself off, get back on the horse. And I feel like that was the first instance where it was so painful to try and do that. It just taught me so much. And I just kept doing that and doing that and doing that. And I genuinely feel like I owed so much of my success in my career to basically just being able to pick myself up and dust myself off and go again. And I feel like that was where I really just learned that lesson. And so that was not me, that was my family, and that was my mum and dad. And sometimes it is, you know, when people say, you know, when you stand up on the block, it isn't just you, or, you know, you go to race, it isn't just you, it is the people around you that shape you and help you and help you get there. Because for me, that was so true.
Yeah, so let's go back to like this. Loads going on, obviously, in that period of your life. But going back to why you first started swimming in the first place, like what was it about swimming that you enjoy? Like, I personally love swimming because it's just this feeling of being connected to your body it's almost like being in space sometimes, but like it is for me just such a natural thing. Like, it being for me being out in the sea, connected to nature, whether it's in a pool, just again that lovely feeling of shutting the world out. But what got you into it from definitely like a sporting perspective to actually get and compete? And I'd also be interested to know, like, you obviously got diagnosed in 2012. So were you growing up knowing you had colitis? Like, obviously there's, like you said, there's many different symptoms of it, but like lots of trips to the bathroom, like fatigue, low immune system. So what was it like sort of pre-knowing and then post-knowing? But start off with why you even got into swimming in the first place.
So I came from a really sporty family, and well, my dad is very sporty, and we're big sports fans in my household. Like, we just love watching sport, love sort of taking part in sport. So my dad encouraged my brother and I to just try loads of things when we were younger. And I did gymnastics, I did like football, I did tennis, and my brother did all the same. But for me, like, swimming was just the one that stuck, and the one where I found I had the most sort of natural ability, the most talent. And I really struggled with confidence when I was younger. I don't really know why, because I grew up in such a loving household, and my mum and dad and the rest of my family showered me with love, and I was just quite an unconfident kid. And when I was at school, I didn't have a great time at primary school. I didn't really make friends easily, and it was just a bit of a strange time, I remember, and I didn't have a lot of happy memories from primary school. And then I remember when I found swimming, it completely genuinely changed my life in a really cliche way. It did. I gained all these new friends outside of school, which at that age was so important to me. And I used to get home from school and just be so excited to go swimming. So I completely fell in love with it when I just started. And back then I had a natural ability and I was good at swimming and I had great feel of the water, but I never imagined it would be what it turned out to be. It was just the fact that it just filled me with confidence, and I was obviously, I had a little bit of a talent for it. So I'd go to competitions and I'd swim well, and I had a great experience with my friends that I made through the sport, and I used to just love it. And my parents were so devoted to, like, ferrying me, my brother, to and from every year, all these galas and competitions, so that I could, enjoy them with my friends. And that was why I fell in love with it. It filled me with confidence that I didn't really have when I was younger. And then I feel like I started swimming properly at around the age of sort of 10, 11, like just before I went to senior school. And then when I went to senior school, I felt like I'd gained so much confidence from the swimming. It really sort of did help set me up in that way to then go into senior school. And I had a lot better experience in senior school. And so I think swimming just, it really became my whole life from quite a young age. And then in terms of colitis, so after the London 2012 trials, I remember my coach sat me down, and I was obviously devastated about thinking that I wasn't going to be competing in London. And he said, well, we've got the second trials, which are in June, July, and there is a spot still left open in the 100 breaststroke, which I know you'd have to drop a bit of time on your personal best, but you've got a puncher's chance at the 100 breaststroke at the second trials if you want to try and make the team. So I thought, I've got nothing to lose, everything to gain, and I just absolutely went for it. I put all my eggs in the breaststroke basket. I trained breaststroke constantly for months, and I mean, it was a real puncher's chance. I had to drop quite a substantial amount of time in swimming, but I was quite fearless back then, and I just thought, what have I got to lose? And I went for it. And at the second trials, I swam under the qualifying time and got selected, which was unbelievable. It was such a great feeling. And again, I don't think I'd have done that had I not had that experience of getting back on the horse quickly. But throughout that time, one thing which I just again, I look back with complete dissociation, was I was suffering from undiagnosed symptoms of colitis for a long time. So I remember thinking, I obviously went to the World Championships in 2015, and that was in Shanghai. And obviously, you know, I was eating like different food and things over there. And I came back and I remember thinking, I must have caught a tummy bug or something from China that I haven't really got over. And I just didn't really know what it was. And the symptoms got progressively worse. You know, it started off going to the toilet more frequently. And then it got to a point where I was going to the toilet, you know, 10, 15 times a day. I was taking Imodium and still going to the toilet all the time. Yeah, I used to just sort of load myself up on Imodiums and painkillers, which was just, well, you know, like paracetamol and buscopan and like, you know, tummy things, just to sort of try and get through the day. And I look back and I just don't know how I managed to train and compete and make an Olympic team whilst I had all that going on.
You mentioned that that was something that you had struggled to get consistent training. Now, for people that obviously may not be training in swimming, that is so important for swimmers. Like, I think it was Michael Phelps come out, and whether it's exacerbated or not, like you said, he had 3 years of never a day off, because you need that amount of consistent training. And you were talking about how lucky you might be to string 3 weeks together. So this is what colitis is doing to you. It's literally dragging you out of the pool to stop you from training. That's incredible.
That's exactly that swimming. There's a lot of sports where obviously consistency is important, but I think in swimming, it must be, because swimming's so unnatural, you know, when you run or you do a sport which is on land, you're kind of almost constantly training because you're walking around and everything. Whereas swimming, yeah, you need to be in the pool so much of the time because it's an unnatural thing and you have to get the feel of the water. They used to say that if you had 3 days off, you were unfit. Like, 3 days is such a huge...
Wow.
Yeah. So
on land, it would be probably about 2 weeks. Like 2 weeks, yeah, until you start seeing regression.
Yeah, and it's crazy because actually with COVID, we're seeing that athletes have had more time at the water and are benefiting, but still some have, some haven't. It's still something that is really hard to understand in swimming. But the general rule is that, you know, time at the water is just, especially before competitions. So you can have time off, and they're sort of understanding now that you can get probably fitter in a shorter space of time, but you couldn't have a few days off before a competition and then race well. It's just, it's game over. And yeah, and for me, I was having time off all the time. Eventually they got to a point where they would track how much training you did. And thankfully they never did that when I was, so up until Rio, they didn't really monitor or give you feedback of like sessions missed and stuff. So I didn't ever really get to see how much time I'd had out of the water, which was good because I feel like I'd have had that, a graph of all the sessions I'd missed and all the, you know, the work I hadn't done in the years sort of leading up to Rio. I'd have just panicked and thought, oh my gosh, there's no way I can stand up on the block. And they do that now. And I think, you know, for someone like me, where consistency is really difficult, I think that can kind of create a lot of doubts that actually it's completely unhelpful. But so yeah, swimming is a sport that it is really all about consistency and just being in the water as much as possible. And yeah, that was one thing which I don't know how, but in the lead up to London, I was battling all these undiagnosed symptoms. I couldn't, sometimes I couldn't even make it to the toilet. It got that bad. It was really, really awful. I'd have random joint pain, which was unexplained. I'd be going for scans on, you know, I remember I went for a knee scan not long before the Olympics, because I was getting really bad knee pain, and the scan just showed that there was absolutely nothing there. It was just basically an inflammatory response to the colitis. And I remember another thing, like I would wake up in the morning and I couldn't see anything for like 20 minutes. It was really quite, like, good thing I couldn't drive back then. But wow. I just had really blurry vision. And again, that's another inflammatory response. And, you know, I used to just sleep for hours. I remember I slept for 19 hours one weekend, full all the way through. Didn't wake up once.
Oh my God.
It was quite funny. I'm quite proud of it because everyone used to joke that I was a great sleeper. And I do pride myself on the fact that I can just sleep for Britain. yeah. And back then it was crazy. I remember my mum and dad, they went away. So I went to bed at 10 o'clock, I think, on Saturday night. And then my mum and dad were at a rugby tournament with my brother, and they basically like couldn't get hold of me all day. They thought, they panicked. But anyway, didn't get back till about 6 p.m. and found me still in bed asleep.
Oh my God, wow.
So, yeah, I don't know how that happened, but I was just so fatigued, so tired. And I do think, like, how did I do that? But again, you know, that's one thing which has given me perspective to think, wow, like, I was pretty tough cookie to get through that. And then, yeah, so that happened. But then when I got the diagnosis, I think that was a completely different story. I got through that because it was mind over matter. I didn't think anything was wrong. I wasn't told that I had ulcerative colitis. I wasn't told that I was ill. I wanted to make the Olympic team, and I was so single-minded that, like, you know, I just put my blood, sweat and tears into it. And I didn't think that there could be anything wrong with me, but I didn't know that there was anything wrong with me. And then when obviously I got the diagnosis afterwards, that was completely difficult and different to accept and understand. And it took me probably about a year to really come to terms with it. And I struggled with acceptance. I struggled with learning how to cope, how to adapt. I think I pretty much got away with burning the candle at both ends that year, but then trying to do that the next year because I just refused to accept it was a disaster. And I had a really, really bad year in 2013 where I swam really terribly and basically overtrained, and had to then completely change my training program the year of 2014. But yeah, it took me a long time to come to terms with it. And, you know, I think had I had the diagnosis before London 2012, so, you know, maybe I'd gone in for the scan and the tests like a few months previous, I don't think I'd have made the team. I genuinely feel like I was quite lucky to have made the team because I just wasn't aware of what was going on. And had I had that diagnosis a few months before, it would have completely thrown me and I just would have been all over the place, you know, and what does this mean? You know, I think actually, if anything, it was a blessing that it was later and I was able to kind of, it was mind over matter really. And I just didn't think anything was wrong. So I was going to push through regardless. And afterwards it did, you know, that diagnosis did sort of hit me and it took me a long time to come to terms with it. So I was quite lucky in a way that was the timings because it worked out that I could go to the Olympics.
And it didn't sound like it didn't have you started off where it didn't have a label. So you didn't have a label on it before and it was just this mystery and almost like, okay, this is just me. But the thing I'm also interested in is you've spoken about how good a relationship you've had with your coach, Dave, and also your parents having a big role. Was there really interesting from his side almost, I don't know whether you can speak for him on it, but be very easy for a coach to have someone like yourself with, like, without sounding too bad about it, like a difficult swimmer, like that you're in and out of the pool, like, oh God, we can't get her to train consistently. It must have been frustrating on his end, but also incredibly, I guess, resilient on his end as well. The fact that he stuck with you, like he stuck with you all that time, like he didn't get rid of you and didn't push you to one side. Like, must have had a huge amount of belief from his side and also your parents, which must have then instilled that belief in yourself.
Yeah, 100%. I could almost get quite emotional talking about it because he meant everything to me. Like, he genuinely believed in me so much that he says I was the most difficult swimmer he's ever coached. And that's probably not just because of the colitis, that's probably just because of you know, all the other things, all the other drama and stuff that I probably bought. But, you know, he used to say, oh, I just want an easy life. And he was amazing. And it is honestly testament to how much belief he had in me and how adaptive he could be. And, you know, if you know Dave, like, he he was so set in his ways with like his program, and he's got an amazing program. It was amazing to see, and I was so proud of him because he in Tokyo became the most decorated coach of all time. He hasn't just done it with me, he's done it with tons of swimmers. And from 2008 all the way through to 2020, he's had medalists, he's had bronze medalists, silver medalists, and now gold medalists in Tom Dean and James Guy at Tokyo. And it's just testament to the amazing coach he is. But he always said that I was the most difficult swimmer. And, you know, that's completely fair enough, because I was, and I did in some ways, you know, I must have made his life hell. But he just believed in me so much from such a young age. You know, he took a chance on me joining the program when I was really young. And thankfully, I like managed to prove that when I was given the opportunity, I could do it. And I think he just saw that talent and knew that if he could nurture it and if I could get that consistency and we could work out a way of getting that consistency, I could deliver. I had all the other ingredients. I just didn't have the right sort of like the right body, really. Like that was the thing that let me down. And he was just absolutely fantastic. We used to have to constantly adapt things and make changes. And, you know, he had to, just as I had to be resilient, he had to be really resilient, because sometimes his plan would get thrown out the window. And he was so, like, he is really set in his ways. He knows what it takes to get success. And he had to almost sometimes, you know, throw away the plan and think, oh gosh, what are we going to do now? Like the preparation's ruined. Like we have to adapt. We have to do it differently. And he did. And if it wasn't for him having that belief in me and not just giving up on me when it got tough, I would never have achieved anything. Because, you know, I had all the support from my family and I had all the tools, but I needed that coach. And I was so lucky that I found Dave. He is fantastic, and he had just great ability to adapt, to be resilient, to work with me, even though we always clashed heads all the time because we're both really stubborn. You know, we had for years like a crazy like love-hate relationship. Everyone used to sort of look at us and think, oh my gosh, like it's so dysfunctional, because we both wanted the same thing, but we were so passionate that like sometimes of course like we would not agree, or it would just be so hard because of the journey. The journey was so hard. It was constantly up and down. It was never smooth sailing. I don't think he ever had in the lead up to Rio, I don't think he ever had an easy week, and he just said, I just want an easy life. And that was just not the case. But I feel like, you know, it was so worth it. And we are so close. Like he's, you know, he's like a second dad to me. Like, you know, now like we're, you know, thick as thieves, and we're really, really close friends. And I'd say he's one of, you know, the most important people in my life. But it was, yeah, a really, really difficult time. But I'm so glad that he didn't give up on me, because I needed him and I couldn't have done it on my own.
To get to Rio, what did you do once you'd had that diagnosis then? So he now knows what it is. Mm-hmm. You now know what it is. Everyone's going to understand what it is. And it's now, okay, right, there is something going on. Again, really easy to want to just put everything aside and label yourself with this condition and go, okay, well, Rio is not going to happen, or that's something that just not achievable. But you didn't. So what did you do? What was the change that happened? And I know you've also spoken before about how you tracked your training, and you were really keen on tracking your training, which I think is really important for young athletes to hear about. Was that a part of the process to getting to Rio? And was there a shift in, I guess, that mentality from Dave yourself and the relationship you had there, along with having a bit more of a structure around how to get there?
Definitely. I had to just adapt, and it took me a long time to learn about my body and what works and what didn't work. And I feel like that 4 years gave me a good amount of time to be able to make mistakes and learn from them. So in 2013, so the year after I was diagnosed, I basically pretended nothing had happened, and just tried to carry on burning the candle at both ends and pushing my body to the absolute limit, never changing anything in my program, not getting enough rest, not getting enough recovery. And just, yeah, it proved to be an absolute disaster at the World Championships in 2013. I swam terribly. I used to get to the end of every race and basically like pass out and be sick. I was completely overtrained. And the next year after that, we stripped it completely back. I went from doing 70 kilometers a week to about 50, which at my age was like unheard of. Like for me to sort of drop that much in volume was completely unheard of and was a big risk, because, you know, in swimming, it's sort of basically how much can you handle in training and not break, and then you'll swim well. That's like the sort of mentality. It's very, it's about pushing yourself a lot, and it's changing now. I've seen it change so much. A lot of swimmers are doing different programs and doing a lot less, and you know, there's USRPT and all these different methods of training which are being evolved, and people are using now, which have been proved to work fantastically well. But where I swam and Dave's program and what has worked for him over the years is a pretty brutal, hard training program. It's about training smart, not hard, but like just basically trying to get, you know, push yourself crazy. And so I dropped a huge amount in volume, and I trained with like some of the sprinters and some of the older guys in my squad who were obviously older and couldn't handle the volume. And that proved to be a huge benefit. I was able to get through the week so much better. I mean, it was, I don't know how much percent of a drop that is, but it's quite a big percentage drop in loads. And it just meant I was able to actually perform in the sessions rather than just get through them and survive. And so that made a massive difference. I also found that, you know, I really struggled with traveling. Anywhere where I'd have to travel, it just took it out of me like crazy. It would either be because, you know, the change in food, the change in water, it could sometimes like bring on symptoms, or it's a flight, and I needed so much rest and recovery to be able to stay fit and healthy in the pool. So if I went away, had jet lag or something, and I came back, I'd just probably likely get ill, and that would mean like a week out the pool. And sometimes I would not go away on trips, and I'd pull out of trips, which I always got pushback from, you know, with, you know, the governing body and stuff, because people didn't understand. I'd say like, this is just for me personally, like this is just not the best way to get the best out of myself, or it's not the way that I'm going to perform. And I know it might work for everyone else, but unfortunately for me, if I go away, I can, you know, swim at this competition, great, like I'll get racing experience, but it's not worth it when I can race locally and then I don't have to interrupt, like, you know, my sleeping, and I don't have to then potentially get ill, because I would always get ill. So things like that, which took a while to learn, but it did really, really help. And it was always hard having those conversations, but I'm really glad that I did, and I sort of stayed true to what I believed was best for me. And the biggest thing was like not comparing myself to everyone else, and I did that for years, and I really struggled with thinking, why can't I just be able to be as resilient and robust as them? Like, why can't I go away and do these competitions? And, you know, sometimes it was like going away and doing competitions where you get good prize money and I'd have to pull out, and all of these things where I would always just think, oh gosh, like this is really annoying. But I always had to think big picture, and what's my goal? Where am I trying to be? And what's going to help me get there? And what's best for my journey and my preparation? And I'm really glad that although sometimes I was pushed back, I did the thing that was best for me and didn't compare to other people, because as athletes, we're really guilty of doing that as well. And what's best for you might not be best for another person. And that was one lesson I learned massively, and that helped me so much. And then, yeah, one thing which really helped me in the lead up to Rio was planning or using a training tracker. I sat down with my psychologist, you know, almost like 2 years out from Rio when we started working together really closely. And at the time he worked for Chimp Management, and I got to understand all about the psychology and how the brain works, and how when you come into a major competition, you're going to have so many nerves and doubts and all of these things like flying around your head, which aren't completely natural. And it's your body's way of obviously trying to keep you in your comfort zone. And it was trying to work out what my doubts and like what my chimp would be like going into Rio, and how best to manage that, and how I could prepare for those thoughts and feelings. And for me, the biggest doubt because of my journey was that I hadn't done enough and I hadn't been able to basically get the preparation that I needed to stand up on the block and perform, because that was always the thing that I was struggling with. So I sat down with Rich and we worked out that if I could have a training planner and I could basically map out my sessions, and at, you know, when I got to Rio and I stood up on the block, I could look back at all of the work I'd done with a really unbiased view, not so I could let my head and my chimp hijack me saying, you haven't done enough, you haven't done this, you haven't done that. I could look back and look at, you know, objectively all the work I'd done. And for me, it wasn't, oh, I've done 70K that week and 60K. And it wasn't about volumes and it wasn't about times or anything. It was my effort and my intensity, and that there were five different goals that I had to achieve every day. And it was, did I turn up with the right attitude? Did I turn up with, and give my all to that session? And whatever the aim was for that session, whether it was in a recovery session, did I get to the recovery session and do the best I could at that recovery session? And that could just be swimming easy for like 45 minutes, but did I do that to the best of my ability? And then, you know, and then it could be a hard session. Did I do that hard session to the best of my ability? And that doesn't mean swimming fast times, because when you're an athlete, that never happens every day. Like, you can't just always perform every day, but as long as you give your best effort, that's all that you can do. And another one was about my relationship with Dave. And I think there was just about five different things that I scored myself, like red, amber, green, but none of them were, you know, times or
volume. Yeah, outcome-based things.
Exactly. So, and it, then I had this spreadsheet, which I could look back on, and it was like green. And that then gave me the belief when I got to Rio, the biggest competition in my life, where I had tons and tons of doubts. You know, I hadn't swum a personal best time in 2 years, which at my age is a big thing. You know, I swam really well in 2014 at the Commonwealth Games, but at that, you know, the next year in 2015, I didn't have a good year. I had an okay year, but I didn't perform the way I wanted to. I didn't swim a personal best. And, you know, I'd had a difficult year with other things going on. So it was, you know, going into Rio, I didn't have tons of confidence, and I'd had a really bumpy journey, and I just basically had that tool, that training map, which I could look back and think, well, actually, I've done absolutely everything that I can do. I've recovered well. I've trained to the best of my ability. I've left no stone unturned. And then when I stand up on the block, whatever happens, happens. And that's sport. And it just, yeah, it alleviated so many doubts. It silenced my chimp. And you know, obviously I was still nervous in the cool room and when I was there, and, you know, I still have butterflies and all those sort of things, but I just knew that I'd done everything I can, and that was the best preparation I could have had.
Yeah, for people that are listening that don't know the whole chimp analogy, like, that's from Dr. Steve Peters' Chimp Paradox book, which I've actually recommended in a previous podcast about. It's one of the four books I recommend for athletes. But so you definitely felt that helped, and you're standing at the top on the blocks at Rio, you're about to jump in for your swim. And how did that then feel in the swim? Because if people watch that race, like, you're literally the last 5-10 meters, you nearly had it, like, and it was such a cool race. You nearly had the gold, but it's an amazing swim. And did it feel as good as it looked? And do you feel that that was due down to all of that preparation and that mental prep rather than the fit? Because you said there, the physical stuff was not necessarily there, in the sense that you've had the consistency in the pool, you've had as much training as everyone else. And this is something I'm fascinated with elite athletes, because I genuinely believe, like, it is your mindset that is that defining factor. And this is such a good story and almost case study to show that you don't need all that training. You don't need to overtrain, because I did that. I've overtrained. But the mindset, you standing at the top of the blocks at Rio, that's a completely different feel from what you're saying. And then did it feel in the race easy, tough? Yeah, what was that whole in the pool moment feeling like?
In the pool, I remember when I touched the wall, I just couldn't believe that I'd swam that time. I never, ever believed that I could go 206. 206 in swimming in my event is almost like completely uncharted territory. The only girl that Well, there's been one girl, and it was the girl who beat me, who's gone faster, and she holds the world record. But before that, there was only one girl who was in a shiny suit. And, you know, even in Tokyo, just gone, I think it was still 2 seconds faster than the time that won gold. Like, it's a time I just never believed I was capable of. And yeah, so I touched the wall and I turned around and I thought, oh my gosh, how have I swam that time? And then I realized how close I got to gold, and I just couldn't believe it. You know, it was quite bittersweet. Going into it, a medal was my goal. Like, that was my goal, was to stand on the podium. You know, the girl that beat me, Katin Kozu, she was world record holder. She was on fire. She broke the world record in the 400 meters in Rio a few days before, absolutely smashed the world record. You know, she'd been going and winning races all around the world. Like, she, you know, that gold medal, going into it, I thought it was going to be a big challenge to beat her. She was 2 seconds clear of me. So for me to drop down to the 206 and get so close to her, I couldn't believe it. And then it was obviously almost bittersweet, because I thought, oh gosh, I was so close to gold. But I couldn't think like that, because for me, that silver medal was my gold medal. And the race, I remember thinking afterwards, it didn't hurt at all. Like, I remember just being like, I think adrenaline and then the excitement and just the rush of emotions, I didn't feel the pain. But then I went and had my lactate taken, and I think it's quite funny because it was a lactate PB, so it was like 20 or something. I've never been near that. So I was obviously, like, my body was in agony, but I just couldn't feel it because of all the excitement. So I think, you know, they do say that when you perform it like that, it feels like an out-of-body experience. And I think that's what it was, because it felt so surreal when I touched the wall. I can imagine if I'd swam that time and it had been a disappointment, it would have hurt. I don't know. I don't really know how the mind and all that sort of thing works with adrenaline or whatever. But yeah, it was a pretty special feeling. And, you know, it's so true. I never had an easy ride, and I never had smooth sailing in terms of preparation. And I managed to get a few weeks of consistent training, but even at the trials in April, only a few months before the games, I'd swam pretty poorly, and I just made the team. I just swam under the qualifying time. I went a 2:09, which was then 3 seconds slower than what I went in Rio. You know, and I had articles that were written. There was an article I remember vividly. It was written about me and my teammate Jazz, because we'd both won medals at the World Championships in Kazan the year before, and our next big competition was the trials in April, and we'd both basically scraped onto the team. Like, we just made the team. We didn't really perform very well. And the article basically slated our chances in Rio, saying, you know, they didn't swim very well at the trials. It sort of looks like this season's all over for them, really. And I remember reading it and being absolutely livid. Like, it just made my blood boil. And I think that was, again, like, something which, if I'd have paid too much attention to that, let it get the better of me. It was all about, you know, mindset. And I just didn't believe that I couldn't do it. I believed I could do it. If I could get everything right and I could get into a place where, you know, I believed I could do it, then why couldn't I? I found ways of alleviating those doubts and found tools and things that would help me, like that training tool. You know, and I had my coach who we constantly adapted. We made changes. We, you know, again, like, just before the Olympics, I didn't go away on a camp, or I didn't go away to a competition, which was in France. I chose to go just up the road to Glasgow and compete rather than travel and go away. Things that, you know, I made changes. I made things work for me so that I could stay in the pool, stay fit, stay healthy. You know, even at the, I think it was one of the last competitions I did before Rio, I got injured and I had to pull out, and I swam absolutely terribly. It was at the Men Ostroms in Barcelona. I remember it was about a month before Rio, and I had a wrist injury. It was like playing me up a little bit, and I was swimming pretty poorly. And I remember thinking, I'm actually quite glad that my wrist is hurting and I'm having to pull out, because I don't want people to see these times that are posted because they were that bad. And, you know, that's just the ups and downs of sports. I was obviously in really, really hard training, and I was so knackered, like so, so tired, that I'd sort of, you know, you go through like an adaptation phase. And Dave, my coach, is quite sort of famous at like putting people in these real sort of training holes where you're absolutely depleted. And then when you taper and when you rest, you just go like that and your body just like comes alive. And it's amazing. It's crazy how it works, because you go from feeling like you're so tired, you could barely swim another meter. And then when you race, you swim absolutely terribly. But then when you rest and you sharpen up and you go through taper and you go through adaptation, your body just like responds to all this hard work you've done. And again, you have to be mentally strong to get through that. You have to like not pay attention to the bad times of swimming and think that actually this is all part of the process. For me, it was just all part of the process. And I knew that I had to train really, really hard if I wanted to get to do better than I've ever done. You know, if I wanted to swim a PB, I had to train harder than I ever have before. And so I was definitely mentally strong, definitely well prepared mentally. I'd learned tough lessons from sort of the previous 4 years. And yeah, I felt so well prepared when I stood up on the block in Rio, and, you know, it paid off. But, you know, it wasn't like I sort of went in with tons of confidence. I didn't at all. So it is a great, I guess, lesson to like younger athletes, because it's not, you know, you can perform and outperform and surprise yourself and have these amazing results if you just believe in yourself and you get the best out of yourself by trusting the process and also believing in the people that you work with, like your coach, you know, your family, you sort of people around you to help you and support you through the tough times. But also, yeah, believing in yourself and believing that you can do it and finding ways that you can alleviate those doubts that work for you.
Yeah, trusting the process. Your story is really like one that I really will push people to listen to, because of the fact that everyone focuses so much on the training, like you said, especially in a sport like you, getting in the pool, doing a ton of training, constantly hitting lap after lap after lap. And then for someone to take that down, reduce that training, find a place where you feel comfortable and believe in yourself so much, and then still perform on the biggest stage, that is such a big lesson for people to learn. And like, I even think of myself being a young athlete, I fell into that trap of like overtraining, thinking like, if I have that day off, it's not gonna work. And that trust that you had in the training to taper and then bang, you're well again. That takes a lot of trust in that. I think swimming and I think long distance running has that as well, where it's those taper periods and Olympic sports in general have that taper period. But it's just such a great story for people to hear, like that you don't have to, or to focus on putting yourself into a confident frame of mind is so important. It is so, so important for people to do. I'm conscious of time, like we've gone on for ages, and I think there were so many things I was asking you, which you've answered around sort of your toughest moments, your overcoming adversities, and it's just full of it in your story. But one thing I always believe in that underpins us as athletes is who we are as people. And I wondered whether there were some values or attributes that you feel you've lived by that have allowed you to be not only a good person, but a great athlete as well.
I don't know. That's a good question. That's a really good question. I think one thing that, you know, is so important as an athlete is to like never let, this is a cliche saying, but I've just thought it's so true, never let success go to your head and then failure go to your heart. Like, I just think if you, in both ways they can be bad. You know, sport is an amazing thing, and I'm such a huge sports fan. I love the way it enriches people's lives across like every level of participation. But at the end of the day, it is just sport. And, you know, when I was a swimmer, I'd get so wrapped up in it. But at the end of the day, it's just swimming. And it's something that I loved to do when I was little. And I've been lucky that I could take it all around the world and like experience all these amazing things as being an athlete. But at the end of the day, it is just swimming. And it's something that I choose to do. And it's, you know, it shouldn't define me. I have sometimes feel like I've let it define me, which it shouldn't. But, you know, when you strip everything away, it's literally like getting in a big tank of water and trying to get from like one side of the other to the other. And I just think it's just a fun thing to do. And it's not anything more than that. And what matters is what people think of you when all of that is stripped away, and you know, who you are as a person. I just always thought, like, the two things that you can control, you, like, when you walk into a room, is that you can be the kindest and the most hardworking, and other than that, you can't really control anything else. So yeah, I just always tried to, you know, work my socks off and try and make the most of the opportunities that were delivered to me, but never treat anyone as any differently. Like, that, I think that's, you know, that's not a very good way of putting it, but
no, it was, I mean, it's incredible. It's so true. And I think you also mentioned it earlier about having the cards you've been dealt and just playing anyway. That's something that is, I think people can get so wrapped up in that, like, they can get so wrapped up in, like, woe is me, what I have, like, and lean on and use it as a crutch. Mm-hmm. The Paralympics is a great example of people that don't allow that to happen. Mm-hmm. And they choose, you have the choice of which way you go with things. And you chose to, even after your diagnosis, you chose to continue. And that's, again, all of these little choices that we have are just massive. Is there, just before we finish, wrap up, is there a book, a film, documentary that you have felt you love and recommend to people a lot, that, and especially athletes, that may have an impact in their world?
That's a really great question. I've read quite a few books that I really like. One which is quite interesting to read, which I absolutely loved, was Andre Agassi, Open. I loved reading that. I think when I read that, it just completely, blew my mind. And I would love the opportunity to meet him. I just think I'd love to ask him things. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just, that book for me was one of the best autobiographies I've ever read from someone in sport. Because it was just so open. I mean, it says it in the title. And that really stuck with me, that book. In terms of, you know, people that, you just spoke about the Paralympics, and someone I think, you know, if to look at their story, Ali Jawad, he's a Paralympian weightlifter, and he was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And he is so inspiring. I think, you know, about a year ago, he was at a crossroads between, you know, being told that he might not even compete and, like, whether he could even get to the Paralympics, and he's there competing now. And, like, his story is just unbelievable, and he's so strong and just such a lovely person. And, you know, one of the things about colitis is, by him sharing his experience, like, I feel better about talking about mine. And, like, when I hear him speak, it gives me strength. And I think that's one of the nice things about the Crohn's and colitis community, is what he's doing is helping so many people by speaking about his experience. And he's just amazing. He's a huge inspiration to me. In terms of books, I mean, I don't know, that Andre Agassi is probably one of the,
I mean, Open is a book that I've recommended on this podcast for. It is an incredible book. It's for sure. It's one that, you're so right, I'd love to meet him, chat with him, because I think the way he spoke about his career is just exactly, the title is just so perfect.
Yeah,
like, he just nailed it.
Completely agree.
And obviously now, where you're finished, where you're done and you're finished with training, and your well-being is a big part of reason why you finished, is, what are you, there's going to be so many things with gut health around the world right now, and that is a completely huge rabbit hole to fall down when you go down that road. What are the things that you're doing to look after yourself now? What are the things you're excited about moving forward? Sort of, what's the future looking like for Siobhan?
So, a good question. So, I mean, I'm doing so much better than I was. Like, it's really opened my eyes. Not swimming, I'm not pushing my body to the absolute limit. I just feel so much better and given my body that rest. But I was almost quite surprised at the fact that, like, I look back and I think, how did I get through a week of training? Because, you know, even now, I'm I'm nowhere near as energetic as I feel like I should be for someone my age. Like I just need so much sleep. I need so much rest and recovery, and I have to eat right. And like all these things, which, you know, I just have to do as having that my condition. And it does have quite a big toll when I have bad days in my tummy. And I think, well, how did I swim 4 hours a day and, you know, wake up early in the morning and like drive myself to the pool? And like, so one of the things obviously about retirement is I've given my body the rest that it needs, which is really good. I'm starting to feel better from it now, but it took me a long time. I'd say like only probably recently where I've felt that I've actually started to feel a bit more back to normal. it's been a journey. I'm just trying to find my feet with not swimming anymore, and you know what that's like, and trying to find exercise I enjoy, because I've had this love-hate relationship with exercise for a long time. And I need to obviously try and get into the mindset of not feeling that, you know, when I go to the gym or anything, I have to be doing like the training that I used to.
Yeah.
It's a hard transition to make. Because
I've felt that it's trying, you feel like you have to be regimented. There's a goal to hit, and it's the difference of training for health and well-being compared to training for pure performance. And like eating as well, like I get caught in the trap sometimes of like eating for fuel. And I think as well, like men, for some reason, we have this huge, like, macho, or I'm going to have the biggest steak, the biggest breakfast. And like, I just eat and eat and eat. And it's like, yeah, I'm a hero. Watch me roar. But now it's like, well, how do I feel? Am I energized? All my markers are sort of on, how am I feeling? Am I feeling energized? Has my sleep, like, am I compromising my sleep? And usually the answer being yes. But yeah, that's the thing that I think is a real tough one to change, when you go to be like, what am I doing with my training? Like, what's my goal? How am I resetting my goal? So I think it is a tough challenge for athletes that do come out of their sport to rejig their training and find what works for them.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm kind of going through that now, and I just want to find something I enjoy with exercise, and then also with, you know, work and stuff. And I have been studying to be a journalist, so that's really cool, and I'm enjoying that. I started that about 18 months ago now, and it was because I sort of thought, well, what would I like to do when I finish swimming? And obviously I finished earlier than I would have liked, but I'm quite glad I started that when I did. So yeah, I'm starting to sort of try and, you know, venture into the commercial world of sport, which if it works out, that's like the dream job for me, being involved with sport, but obviously not on the performance side. I'd absolutely love that. And, you know, I've always been a huge sports fan, and I like writing, and I think sports journalism is where I'd like to go. So I'm hoping that, you know, opportunities arise in that. And I just want to find something I enjoy again and I can throw myself into. You know, swimming, okay, it was tough and it was, you know, a difficult at times. I absolutely loved it, and it gave me so many amazing experiences, which I'm so grateful for. And I just want to find something that I enjoy again. And I think I need something that I can put all my energy into in a different way that I don't now put into swimming. So
no doubt, with your mentality of mind over matter, like, that's not going to be too long before you start getting into something that is really going to shine. Look, Siobhan, thank you so much for time. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you and meeting you and having this conversation. Where is the best place for people to find you if they want to reach out, follow more of what you're doing?
Best place, probably Twitter, Instagram. I don't have a Facebook page really. Just Twitter, Instagram, or, you know, email. I've got an email on my Instagram bio. So yeah, if you would like to get in touch, I'd love to hear from people. So yeah, that's probably the best way to find me.
The story's so inspiring, and no doubt people that have, whether they have ulcerative colitis or any other condition, it's just something that I think people, again, with more athletes talking about their experiences, but yours is a real unique one, and the stories that you've told and the lessons you've learned from it, people can transfer into a load of different things that they're going through themselves. So thank you for sharing it for starters, but it's been an absolute pleasure chatting for this podcast episode.
Yeah, thanks. So it's been a pleasure talking to you too. I've really enjoyed it, and thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Raising Your Game with Siobhan Marie O'Connor. If you did, please share it with someone that you know. This show continues and grows through word of mouth of you guys. And not also forgetting that you can subscribe if you haven't done already. Anyway, thank you again for joining, and I will see you guys next time.